It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. America has spoken, and Donald Trump is the 47th president of the United States. In an overnight celebration speech, Trump claimed victory, addressing supporters at his campaign headquarters in West Palm Beach, Florida, alongside Vice President-elect J.D. Vance.
This was a movement like nobody's ever seen before. And frankly, this was, I believe, the greatest political movement of all time. There's never been anything like this in this country and maybe beyond.
We're never going to stop fighting for you, for your dreams, for the future of your children. And after the greatest political comeback in American history, we're going to lead the greatest economic comeback in American history under Donald Trump's leadership.
This morning, we're taking an in-depth look at election integrity and the transition of power as Trump prepares for his return to the White House, and we discuss what it all means for Wisconsin. We have Rob Yablon, Associate Professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School, Faculty Co-Director of the State Democracy Research Initiative at UW-Madison. Rob, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mike Wagner here as well, Faculty Director of the Center for Communication and Civic Renewal at UW-Madison and a journalism professor. Mike, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Is this win surprising?
No. I mean, we knew it was going to be a very close race. The polls are ultimately relatively accurate across most of the swing states. It was very close the whole time. We knew it was going to be close. We knew it could go either way. And, it's not surprising in terms of the polling. I do think it's a little surprising that a country elected a 34-time, twice-convicted felon, twice-impeached, civilly convicted sexual abuser to be their president. I mean, those are just direct facts that, you know, are unusual in American politics. And so that's surprising. But in terms of what we were expecting with the result, It's right in line with what we were looking at.
Anything we just heard there that stick out to you from his speech overnight and, you know, calling it the greatest comeback in political history?
Yeah, I don't think there's any cause for that claim. The political science predictions made back in July all predicted a Trump victory, given the approval rating of President Biden and other factors that go into those. So it can't be a comeback when you were in the lead.
Rob, it seems like Election Day went by and large pretty smoothly with a large turnout. What was your assessment?
It did seem as though there weren't any major issues. There were small issues that came up in Wisconsin and around the country. None of those issues seemed to have been difference makers. You know, there were some controversies in Milwaukee, for example, about some of the equipment at the central count. There were a few issues, regrettable issues, with bomb threats being called in that did disrupt polling in a few spots. But by and large, it was a fairly smooth election.
Mike had just framed this, you know, Trump, former president, to face state federal crimes, four separate indictments, one of which resulting in a conviction. What happens to Trump's civil and federal cases now that he is president-elect here?
So if that's a question for me.
Yes, go ahead,
Mike. Yeah, it remains to be seen a little bit, and maybe Mike has more to say on this as well. Trump he will soon take control of the Justice Department, and to the extent that there are federal investigations or prosecutions that are pending against him, I expect that those will likely go away. He has state cases, and there will be some legal questions about whether those can proceed. And the most likely answer, I would suspect, is that they won't.
What would you expect out of Harris today, Mike? Chose not to speak on election night. What will you be listening for, watching for?
I expect that if she's persuaded that there's just no chance, which I think it looks to be the case, that she can win. And as Rob was saying, you know, from the best we can tell, this was a very well-conducted election, which is the typical thing in the United States. We do a very good job of this and a great job of this in Wisconsin in particular. I would look for her to probably concede that the election and talk about her disappointment to not become the next president, and to talk about her gratefulness to her family, her staff, her supporters, And also, I imagine that she would call on her supporters to turn the page and stay civically engaged and active, but do so without engaging in political violence.
On the campaign trail, you know, there was profanity, there was name calling, there was violent rhetoric, there was Madison Square Garden and the targeting of Puerto Ricans. Do you see this as a new way that elections go in America, or was this different?
Well, it's not new. We've had many ugly elections in our history. One way that this is different is that it's in our face all the time, right? In 1800, you've got to read the paper or take a horse to your neighbor's house to hear about, you know, what's going on with the rhetoric in the election, whereas now you cannot avoid the horrible, gruesome, grotesque, vitriolic conversations that were taking place from people running for president, and in particular, President-elect Trump in this cycle. And so it's not new, but it's the way it's delivered and the way it kind of seeps into all aspects of our lives is new.
Rob, the U.S. Senate race between Democratic incumbent Tammy Baldwin and Republican challenger Eric Hovde still too close to call as we talk this morning. And although it appears Baldwin is in the lead, do you expect to see any recounts in this particular election?
You know, at the moment, her lead is a bit less than 1%, and that is the recount threshold in Wisconsin. So as a formal matter, it does look like the door would be open to Hovde to seek a recount. He would have to pay for that recount because the margin is greater than 0.25%. And those recounts are expensive. It costs something like $3 million in 2020 just to do a recount in Dane and Milwaukee counties. And the reality is that recounts tend not to shift very many votes. That was the case in Wisconsin, both in 2016 and 2020 when we had presidential election recounts. So given that the margin does appear to be north of 20,000 votes right now, I'm not sure. I have no insight into it, but I'm not sure that he would want to invest the resources in trying to pursue what would likely be a fruitless recount.
Mike, people who voted for Vice President Harris, even those who follow politics very closely, may be feeling surprised at how decisive this Trump win was and the enthusiasm. Why do you think he won? What do you make of that?
Well, I don't think there's any one reason. And I would say to anybody listening, beware the person who says the reason Trump won was X. There were lots of things happening in this election cycle. There were beliefs about the state of the economy as compared to the actual relatively good state of the economy. Lots of rhetoric about immigration, lots of rhetoric about democracy and free and fair elections being on the line. All these things mattered. Where the candidates campaigned mattered. How Trump made some inroads with especially looks like Latino men may well have mattered. Harris seemed to be between 0.3 and 0.5 roughly percentage points behind Biden's performance in 2020 in lots of big cities. That mattered. Like, so just lots of little things mattered. And in, you know, these swing states, they were all really close. And three or four things that change 4,000 or 5,000 votes each are really driving who becomes the president. And so in an electoral college sense, it's a decisive victory, but it's an evenly divided country almost everywhere.
Rob, we were inundated with political ads. They were everywhere in Wisconsin. They were everywhere in swing states. What impact do you see the nature of those ads, the messaging in those ads? What impact do you think that they had?
Well, you know, look, this election is shaping up to be the most expensive in American history. And so you have advertisements, traditional television advertisements, online advertisements. And, you know, as Mike was saying earlier, that messaging is just ubiquitous. And it appears, you know, the Democrats outspent the Republicans in this race, and it didn't ultimately make a difference. And so I think that one question for the political strategists, and I come at this more from a legal angle than the political angle, you know, I think that they're going to have to think about how do you actually get the most bang for your buck when you are trying to invest resources in an election, and is inundating a state with, say, television commercials really the best strategy for you?
Mike, how does our media environment, our media consumption affect how our country views politics, how our country viewed this election?
Yeah, a great question. We consume information, and that information often has a slant favoring one side or another. It also has some level of extremity, being really extreme or really moderate. And then there's also how much different kinds of media we consume. So there's a diversity to it. And folks who have a singular slant for on one side of the aisle, very little diversity and high extremity, are super, super skeptical of election results. They don't think that their vote was likely to be counted accurately. They think that there's election fraud. They believe in conspiracy theories. And so for those folks, they're hearing that they can't trust the system, they're hearing they can't trust the system unless the system serves them. Then they immediately forgive the system and say things must be okay.
We're taking a look at election integrity, the process counting votes nationwide. Our guests are UW-Madison Mike Wagner and law professor Rob Yablon. And Rob, I want to talk a little bit about these legal challenges. Democracy Docket, the voting rights platform, tracks voting-related lawsuits. It says 295 lawsuits have been filed in this election cycle, making it the most litigated U.S. election. Why is that quantity of lawsuits so high?
You know, there are a few different reasons for it. This does seem to be a new reality that we're dealing with, that election contests aren't just being waged in the court of a public opinion, but in actual courts. And why are we seeing that? Well, one is, you know, there have been some legal changes over the past decade that have actually made it easier for the political parties to raise money to support legal work. And so they have more of the financial wherewithal to pursue litigation than they used to. Another reason is that we have seen a lot of changes to election laws and regulations around the country in recent years. And when you have those changes, that can be an occasion to generate some litigation. Something else that is that's just the reality of our current political system is that you have a number of places, including in Wisconsin, where elections tend to be very close. Mm-hmm. And in those places, the political parties and their allies have come to see litigation as a tool to try to give themselves a boost at the margins, to get some rulings that will be favorable to them. The last thing that's worth noting, just in terms of the litigation volume that we're seeing, is as we got close to Election Day in 2024, the bulk of those lawsuits were actually being filed by Republicans and their allies. And it seems like, in part, those lawsuits weren't about getting any particular relief from the courts, but they were about trying to tell a particular story about the election system and maybe even feed some of the distrust that we've had in our election system that some folks have had in recent years. I will just add, maybe an upside to the way that this election has turned out is that for those who have had doubts about the system, who have had a bit of a loss of confidence, maybe this election result does provide some reassurance that the system is not, in fact, rigged. You know, of course, the system is not perfect. Small, isolated problems can arise from time to time. But neither in 2016, nor in 2020, nor in 2024 have we seen systematic problems with the way that votes are cast and counted in this country.
I would follow up with that. With Trump's decisive victory here, will that cause some of these lawsuits to basically evaporate?
It may well. We will see whether there continues to be an appetite to pursue some of these lawsuits. I expect that some of them will just be voluntarily dismissed. In many instances, as I suggested, these lawsuits didn't seem to be as much about getting a win in court as they were about trying to shape a narrative. And now there's not so much of a need for that narrative shaping. Now that the election is over.
Go ahead, Mike. Yeah.
I just wanted to add one thing that Rob said that I think is so important, and that is that the quality of election administration in Wisconsin is really high. And at the center I direct on campus, we've made a video series on our YouTube page, the Center for Communication and Civic Renewal. We have a kind of a new show called The Civic Sift. And the first thing we did was a 15-minute program with election administrators in Wisconsin and election experts and legal experts talking about how we get on, how candidates get on the ballot, how we know who's voting, how they are sure that absentee folks aren't also voting in person, how the count works, how the observation works. And so it is an incredibly transparent and well-run system. And I advise anyone who has an interest in that to just check that out after they stop listening to WPR for the day and really take a deep dive into why we can trust our elections.
Mike, very quickly on that note, do you think poll observers helped in this election, seeing that the process up close?
Clerks think it helps. They think that the best thing you can do to reduce your skepticism is show up and watch the process. People take it so seriously and are so careful and double and triple check. And when there are mistakes, they make it transparent. Yesterday, there was an issue with a tabulator in Milwaukee County in the afternoon. They immediately said so. News organizations immediately accurately reported it. They fixed it and they moved on. That's just what's supposed to happen.
Let's look at misinformation. Microsoft Threat Analysis Center reports that China, Russia, and Iran used AI tactics like social media bots to cast doubt among voters about the voting process ahead of the election. Is there evidence to show whether these foreign cyber activities influenced voters?
We won't know, I think, for a little while if they influenced voters, but they might have. And there were some Russian disinformation efforts in our state and others calling in bomb threats to try to keep people from going to the polls. That slowed down some voting in Georgia. And then there were some extended voting hours there because of that. And so these kinds of like fake bomb threats, misinformation about the election, lying about when Election Day is or how late you can vote or what you have to bring with you to vote, all those things can affect folks. And even if they don't affect your individual vote, they affect your confidence in the system, which is just a net bad for living in a democratic republic like ours.
Rob, take us through the next steps as former President Trump assumes power. Some states right now still counting ballots. What happens in the certification process?
Right. So this is something that will unfold in the coming weeks. And basically in Wisconsin and elsewhere, the results that we have in now are not yet complete. They haven't yet been fully checked and vetted. And so the certification process will happen at multiple levels. In Wisconsin, we'll go to a county board of canvassers over the next couple of weeks or even sooner. They'll check the vote tallies. They'll make sure that all of the votes that should be counted have been counted. They'll then forward those numbers up to the state level. And the chair of our Elections Commission will do the state level certification for the presidential race. You know, that will wrap up probably by the end of the month, if not sooner, given the margins that we're seeing and given the fact that we're probably not going to see a presidential recount, at least in Wisconsin. And then in the presidential race, of course, ultimately the president is elected by the Electoral College. And so, you know, what we are voting for really on Election Day is a slate of presidential electors after certification. We know who those slates are in every state, and they will meet formally in mid-December to cast their electoral votes. Those votes then are passed on to Congress, which will do its counting in early January.
Rob, thank you so much for joining us and sharing this process and your thoughts.
Good to be with you.
And Mike, thank you so much for being here.
You're very welcome.
Rob Yablon is UW-Madison Law School Associate Professor, also Faculty Co-Director of the State Democracy Research Initiative at UW-Madison. And Mike Wagner is Faculty Director of the Center for Civic Communication and Civic Renewal at UW-Madison and a professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication.